Welcome to the More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics, or as we like to call it, real debate without the hate. I'm DJ McGuire, your Republican in exile from Suffolk, Virginia.
I'm Rebecca Kushmider, your Liberal Democrat in Kensington, Maryland.
I'm Cliff Dunn, your Republican not in exile from Newport News, Virginia.
I'm Kevin Kelton, a moderate Democrat from Los Angeles, California.
I'm Molly Cooper, your free market conservative who votes Republican by default.
And I'm Greg Matuszak, your liberal Democrat from Cincinnati, Ohio. The More Perfect Union can be heard on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and at our website, moreperfectunionpodcast.com, where you can also find host bios and written commentary. This week, we have a special guest, Molly Malloy Cooper, who I've known for years. I think she's smart. I think she's funny. And I think she's probably, well, smarter and funnier than all of us combined.
Hey!
That's not really saying much for this group.
I was going to say that really doesn't set the bar very high.
No, we're
low
we're,
bar.
You're supposed to under-promise so I can over-deliver.
Exactly. Molly, why don't real quick...
Believe me, he did.
Yeah, exactly. Molly, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
All right. So I studied economics and Japanese at Notre Dame, and I got my PhD at Ohio State and never left. And there I teach courses in current economic issues, gender and labor markets, and economic history. I have a husband and two teenage kids, one of each, boy and a girl.
Cool. Nice. So this week, boy, the president and his people made a lot of news, as they've been doing every week since they've taken office.
Yeah, they don't take a break, do they?
No, there is no sleeping.
No, the hits really keep coming with these guys.
In this administration. And the thing that I wanted to start with tonight is what appears to be the president's war on the news media. I take umbrage with this because even though our little podcast maybe isn't up there with CNN and MSNBC and Fox News, I think of us in the media. So when he attacks the news media, I kind of feel like he's attacking us. But what does everybody else think of what went down this week?
I ran into a friend of mine who's a journalist today, and I got to tell you, I didn't even talk to him. He's clearly an enemy of the people. We're not hanging out anymore. We're done. I'm through. Just going to ignore him.
Right. That was the tweet that I think got a lot of people up, was that President Trump did refer to the media as, quote, the real enemy of the people. And he mentioned several news outlets, CNN, MSNBC.
He mentioned almost all of them except Fox News, right?
Did he mention Fox?
I don't know.
He did.
So.
He said they were honorable people.
Yes.
Oh, they...
Okay. We cleared that up.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad we worked that out. Woo! Well, now I know what I...
Fear, balanced, and honorable. That's their new slogan.
But it is difficult. It is difficult when you have the president saying that we shouldn't trust our media, who we've gone to for news, and not just any, but across the spectrum. And CNN and MSNBC, these really are pretty respectable. New York Times is
not
another
pretty
one
respectable. They're very respectable.
Very respectable.
Yeah.
Right. It's
the failing New York
saying,
Times. Don't forget the adjective there. The failing New York Times.
The failing New York Times.
They're going to put it on the masthead.
I want to go a step further and state, in my opinion, and I hope you guys share this opinion, by its very definition, CNN and Fox News and the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post cannot be fake news. By the very definition of what they are and who they are. Do they get some stories wrong? Yes, and they would be the first to acknowledge it. That is not fake news. And the president is, you know, he's got some idea that he's going to campaign against the news media and try to turn the country against the news media and therefore delegitimize his critics to help him and his administration somehow advance their agenda. But I think it's a very dangerous thing. I'm really, of all the things that have happened in the first 4 or 5 weeks, this to me is among the most frightening.
I was going to say, now that we've all given everybody a heart attack here, I think the thing we have to remember is, I think a lot of people have been confusing, in Trump's case, have been confusing narcissism with a thirst for tyranny. Now, sometimes the line is blurred. I get that. But we also have to remember that Donald Trump is a New Yorker. And in New York, the New York Times is not the only newspaper.
There's very also funny. The New York Post. If,
there's the New York, York Post, Daily there's News. The Daily News, and there's New York Newsday, which is for Long Island folks. So most cities and towns in the United States are one-paper towns. There are very few metropolitan areas that have multiple newspapers. Most of them are our big cities, of course. But that's what Donald Trump is used to. So when Donald Trump slags the New York Times, that's not the entire media to him, because it's probably not even the media he reads. He probably reads the Post and the Daily News. Yes, he slagged the Washington Post, but he didn't go after the Washington Examiner or the Washington Times, which makes sense because they're both center-right newspapers. He went after
– Or the Daily Caller or Politico or any of the other things
those,
in D.C.
Right. But there are the point is there are certain media outlets that the president genuinely believes not only tilt to the left, but are specifically out to defeat him in 2020. As someone who would like to see him defeated in 2020, I wish his deepest fears were true. They're not. But he's looking at these media sources and he's thinking they're arrayed against me. But he doesn't see them as the entire media, especially in his own city.
I feel compelled to point out also the fact that, you know, setting aside the, you know, the phrasing of quote unquote fake news, arguments over media spin, media bias, etc., are nothing new. We've heard them for years. It's just that the quote unquote fake news line, which mostly refers to, I would say, crap on BuzzFeed that gets accidentally picked up by everybody else, I think that maybe it's been overapplied, but this is simply a variation on something we've heard for years.
In honor of this segment and, you know, this my first podcast here, I wore my news t-shirt.
Which I need one of those.
Molly is showing us a t-shirt that says News Junkie.
Yes, and I bought this at the museum, which is probably my favorite museum. So
I love the museum.
I was editor-in-chief of my high school paper. So, you know, I really am, you know, pro-media, pro-press. But what I think has happened is that, well, these charges of media bias are not new. It's that we have Obama, who the media was so obsequious to, and everything he did was just so wonderful. And then everything Trump does is so terrible, and it just really highlights the difference. And that's part of the reaction and part of why it plays so well.
And there's also always the fact that the media does have one specific bias, and that is towards selling more papers, getting more clicks, etc., which is where you get things like the Betsy DeVos grizzly fighter bit popped up, where she was specifically referring to a situation with a school in, I think it was Wyoming or Montana, where they're in the middle of nowhere, they've actually got a wildlife fence around the school, and yes, there's a chance a bear could get in. Now, her point was, I would argue, that, yeah, there are specific local circumstances which may dictate that a blanket federal rule doesn't work well here. Instead, it gets spun as, she's afraid there will be grizzlies at a school in downtown Washington.
Okay, but you know what? First of all, you're right, Cliff. But let's remember, she did say it. It wasn't fake news. You're saying it's sensationalized news, and that's a different thing. And in terms of Obama, while I will grant you that as of now, I would say that the press has been friendlier to President Obama than it has been to President Trump, let's also admit that that the press took President Obama to task quite often. Now, just to use this example.
In the first 100 days, I don't think so.
Well, but also in the first 100 days, President Obama was friendlier to the press than Donald Trump has been.
Yeah, there was President Obama did go out of his way to be friendlier. It was a give take. To say that the Saturday Night Live skits, Sean Spicer, is an exaggeration is true, but it's not untrue.
That's comedy.
It's based. It's comedy.
That's
but it's based
satire
in reality.
Based on hyperbole. Yeah.
It's based, right.
Yeah,
that's
not what we're talking about. You know, I'm at the point now where my normal go-to sources are actually outside of the United States. And outside of the United States, the assumption that media has certain biases is just taken as a given. No one outside of the United States assumes that any media source is objective. And when a media source claims to be objective, as so many folks in mainstream media claimed that they were in the 80s, in the 90s, and in the aughts, in the rest of the world, they're simply laughed at. It's like that, haha, that's funny. We know you're lying.
And I couldn't agree
like
more.
When we
I
found out Lance Armstrong was doping and only America was surprised.
Yeah. But you know what? You're absolutely right, DJ. And you're right. We delude ourselves into thinking that there was a golden age of journalism when CBS News was objective. They weren't objective. Edward R. Murrow leaned left.
But they played along like they were.
Walter Cronkite leaned left. Edward Newman leaned left. So the idea that, the media, that any given individual or any given news outlet is supposed to be 100% down the line, I agree with you. I think that that's silly. But over the spectrum, I think that you get both sides. And, you know, I disagree that the media leans left. You've got Fox News, which is the dominant player in cable news. It's not just one of three. It's by far the dominant player. You've got the Wall Street Journal that leans right. There are other periodicals that lean right. So this idea that the whole news business is against the president, or that fake news is being distributed to somehow tar and feather the president, is just silly.
Well, let me ask you guys.
15 years ago, I read a study that, and I would really be interested to see an update on this now, because it was before the rise of internet news sources and probably before the rise of the real ideological delineations in certain cable news segments. But it showed that media bias is actually a largely perception by the reader or the viewer, that the more strongly you hold a belief, the more likely you will see the media as antagonistic to your position. And, you know, so you could be looking at NBC News, just to name a network, and it was completely neutral, but you would see it as being very biased against what you believe. Now, the media environment has changed since I read that study, and I really would love to see, you know, if there's more evidence of bias now than there used to be. But there was a time where people were still screaming bias, but the bias was mostly in their own heads.
Good point.
Academia has always been liberal, so if this is done by an academic research, it's, you know,
it was in a class at your noble institution there, so I don't remember who had conducted the study, and I barely remember the name of the professor who taught the class.
Well, let me ask you guys, since we're all political wonks, where do you guys get your information, your news, and do you guys think that it's pretty objective? We'll start with DJ, since he just started laughing.
My main sources of news, frankly, including news in the United States, comes from actually two British papers. The Telegraph, which is a center right newspaper. No doubt. That's usually my first go to source for information, and I must confess, I do have a weakness for the fall over right tabloid Daily Mail. I'm addicted to the damn thing. I'm not proud of it. But I ended up starting to read their stuff during the Brexit debate, and I got hooked. And I always need my fix of confirmation bias and crazy. They have the perfect combination for me. And it gets me through the morning.
Rebecca, what do you read?
I read a combination of the Washington Post and a lot of Politico and a lot of The Hill. Those are, you know, old habits from my days working in advocacy. The Hill leans a little bit right. Politico still is pretending like it doesn't lean left, but let's face it, it does. And the Post is, I'd say it's more open and it's leftward bias than it used to be. It used to try and disguise it a little better, but it's in a full out. It actually, I think, is at war with Donald Trump. I've been amused by how aggressive their stances have gotten.
I will say, though, regarding the Post is not as, outside of perhaps Donald Trump, the Post is not as left-wing as it used to be. It's more open on education reform. It tries to find local Republicans to endorse. It doesn't really succeed all the time. Nothing as ridiculously hilarious as its endorsement of Bob Ehrlich's re-election, which was so funny even Ehrlich disavowed it because everybody knew that was just somebody was drunk at the Post editorial board. But the Post is not, you know, outside of perhaps Trump himself, the Post is not as left-wing as it used to be, at least that's my observation from
afar. You know, the Post is trying to be the smartest kid in the room. You know, it's got kind of a traditional
They've always tried to be the smartest kid in the room.
They're kind of a Stephen Miller model.
Oh, Molly, where are you getting your news?
Well, you saw the T-shirt, right? So
I read it all.
I guess my staple food is the Wall Street Journal, like, you know, a lot of good economists. But I read the Washington Post. I mean, you know, they send me, it's supposed to be, I guess, a weekly email, but they spam me every day. And so I, you know, flip through that. Boston Globe, Columbus Dispatch.
I love the New York Times.
Yeah, I mean,
I live in Cincinnati. And I read the Columbus Dispatch.
But sometimes the, you know, Detroit Free Press, because that's what I grew up on. But and then just, you know, I have a very diverse group of friends on Facebook, and whatever they post, I read. So,
Molly, you grew up in Michigan and you went to Ohio State.
That is true.
Are you actually allowed back at family Thanksgiving, or have you been told they'll shoot you at the door?
No, my family are all Notre Dame fans. So,
okay.
Then you're all right.
I'll be coming clearer now.
You're okay then. I was a little worried for you, Molly.
Yep.
Just looking out for you here.
Yep. So was my husband, who, you know, grew up in the Columbus area. He's like, oh, you're from Michigan. Is this going to be a problem? No.
Greg, what about you? What are you reading these days?
Well, you know, I love the New York Times, the old gray lady. And I think that is right down the center, the most even deal. It is. If you want good, even reporting. Let's be honest. I think they did a hit piece on Trump. Was it yesterday or today? I don't even think they named sources. I mean, it was sort of like... They were just saying, like, we talked to this guy in the park, and I think I'm pretty sure, and he wouldn't give us his name, but I'm pretty sure he said Trump was a Russian czar. I mean,
well, they used the same techniques that Trump uses. They went, people are saying, and they said, that's what they told me.
Right. I mean, I love the New York Times. I think the New York Times has the best crossword puzzles, and I think they do have the best editorials.
They do.
Well, the writing in the New York Times is second to none. Quality of the writing. It's a pleasure to read an article from the New York Times.
It's a delight. It's a joy. it elevates me as a reader. But come on, even I, as this ultra liberal lib who's ever lived, even I can say, like, even I don't buy this. And yet I still buy it. But I love that. I stopped reading the Cincinnati Inquirer after some of their endorsements, which I thought were ridiculous. But I'm told I should give them another chance. They just got a new publisher recently. I do go online. I try to check Fox online at least 3 to 4 days a week to see what's going on. I like to get other perspectives. And it's not, I can't say I stay there a long time, but I still do. And I don't say I always agree. And I also, what else do I read? Those are my big ones. MSNBC is mostly on at my house. And I do watch more C-SPAN than I should, as my kids tell me. Why are we watching this? This vote's going to be really exciting.
C-SPAN is, you know, it's just live feed, man. There's no bias.
I love that.
It's very balanced. Yeah. It will show you Barney Frank, and it will show you what's the right wing version of Barney Frank? Steve King? King's still there.
C-SPAN is true news.
Yes.
Yeah. And I like that. It's pretty raw. Cliff, what are you reading nowadays?
So my reading is always skewed towards the British media. The BBC is actually my favorite. And I tend to find, there are some subtle biases that come in. I would say you have a soft pro-secular / anti-clerical bias that came out during some of the reporting on the Catholic Church scandals. That's my opinion. But other than that, I will read The Guardian. I will read The Telegraph. Ironically, I've never been able to stand Fox News. I don't know why. I would probably read the New York Times and Washington Post more if especially the Times, hadn't gotten so aggressive with their paywalling that do I really want to read this story by you, or do I want to save one of my 5 stories or 10 stories for later in the month?
You never know.
That actually is a dilemma, and it leads to me skipping a lot of them. I tend to go to Real Clear Politics because while they have their own news and analysis department now, they mostly aggregate from other people, and I like what they aggregate. Mm-hmm. And they will go to, the Federalist. They'll go to the Politico, to Roll Call, New York Times, LA Times, Washington Post, you name it, and to a number of the British papers again. So they've got a pretty broad spectrum. I would say, other than the BBC, which kind of has to stay on an even keel, everyone's got their respective biases, and if you know what you're looking for, you'll notice them. If you're trying not to notice it, or if it just happens to agree with you, you'll say, yeah, they're fine, but everybody has their own biases, and they're all biased in favor of clicks.
And I'll jump right in on and just echo a lot of the names that we've already heard. The New York Times, the Washington Post, LA Times. I want to give a shout out to Newsday from Long Island, which DJ mentioned, which is a really great newspaper. Mm-hmm. And I do have a fondness for Huffington Post, which is kind of like, the New York Times meets Highlights magazine. But truthfully,
I that's the best description of HuffPo I've ever heard.
Totally.
But
because I did find all the pictures one day on HuffPo, and I felt really good about myself.
If I need to know 7 things that are going to break up my relationship, that's where I go.
Yes.
But the truth of the matter is, and I will I will admit to reading stuff that shades somewhat left, but if I want to get at a glance, I want to see what's happening in the world, that is my go-to aggregate. What are some of the other aggregates out there? I find them to lean pretty right.
RCP.
Yeah, RCP. Oh, and Politico, which, by the way, I think leans right, and Rebecca thinks it leans left. So,
I love Politico.
Yeah, but they do a good job regardless of where they're leaning. And
it's funny. Politico, when they first started, they were literally giving away copies of Politico. Like, it just started showing up in my office one day, and we were all like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
And they were just desperate to take hold, and their whole philosophy was be first, you don't have to be right. So, they were constantly issuing breaking news alerts that were just flat out wrong, and then they'd issue a correction half an hour later.
Yeah, but considering that I think they started in 2011, 2010, they've done an amazing job of building their business.
No, it was before that. It was probably 07, 08.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But still, yeah, they're probably 10 around years, 10 years now. They've become, people according to them as one of the major news outlets.
They were targeting an inside the Beltway crowd. They were trying to compete with Roll Call and The Hill, and they've managed to go so mainstream in that time. It's really extraordinary.
Yeah. So now let's turn and talk a little bit about the press conference that Trump held the other day. Molly, you were going to say something, I think, in defense of Mr. Trump?
I don't know if it's in defense of Mr. Trump. I just, he's hyperbolic. He's over the top. He's an entertainer in chief. It's his shtick. And I just go back to his people take his supporters take him seriously, but not literally, and his detractors, it's the opposite. They take him
right. We've all heard that literally, but not seriously. But is it fair for the president of the United States, who is not the entertainer in chief? He is the commander in chief. Is it fair for him to stand on stage, purposely misstate facts, and then a breath later castigate the press for sometimes getting things wrong?
No, it's not fair. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so life's not fair.
Life's not fair, but still, he's the president of the United States.
This was a press conference where there were some significant call-outs in this press conference. He stood there and said, I had the biggest electoral college victory in generations.
Since Reagan.
And
Since Reagan.
Somebody stood up and were like, you are aware that George H.W. Bush got more than 100 electoral college votes more than you did. And he's like, well, somebody told me that.
Right.
And here's the thing. And he's spouting conspiracy theories that he gets off of YouTube.
Well, here's the thing. It's not cute for the president of the United States to be misinformed and then say, somebody told me that. If you're the president of the United States, don't go out there and state facts that are wrong just because somebody, in air quotes, told you that. There were 5 elections, people got a higher number of electoral votes than him since Reagan. And so he wasn't just slightly off. He was massively off.
The bigger issue here is the big issue here for me is the comments regarding Russia and the media, where he talked he essentially absolved Vladimir Putin for buzzing one of our destroyers in the Black Sea and playing games on the Atlantic coast near the United States, which other Russian Soviet leaders have done before, but
the Chinese have been doing it lately too.
But the fact that he essentially said that it was the media's fault because they had somehow managed to convince Putin that he couldn't work with Trump, frankly, was the most appalling thing in the entire press conference. Here you have a man, and by the man I mean the president of the United States, who is clearly so vested in the notion that he could strike an alliance with Putin that when it is put in him, when it's put to him in clear black and white for everyone to see that Putin's interests are not our interests, they're not self-determination's interests, and they're not democracy's interests, that he ends up looking to blame someone else rather than simply lay the blame where it belongs at the feet of Vladimir Putin and his cohorts in that regime. That was, frankly, the most important part of this conference, of this news conference, and it was the scariest part of this news conference, and that he is completely unwilling to recognize when he has been completely taken by another foreign leader. This runs afoul of everything he said he was going to do. This runs afoul of his entire vision of himself as a great deal maker. He has revealed himself to be so thoroughly blinded that he can't see the world in front of him. It is as bad as Joseph Stalin refusing to acknowledge that Adolf Hitler was going to invade the Soviet Union in 1941.
Let me ask a question. Is he really doing that bad of a job? And I think the answer is yes. Or is he just not good at press conferences? Does he just once again, and we've seen this before, just fly off at when he does these press conferences, not do any preparation, just walk out there and say, I've got this. I know how to talk to press. I know how to do this, which we know he does.
The press conference was called mere hours before it actually happened.
Right.
So his preparation for it was minimal at best.
Right. So is this one of those situations like we really should be? I mean, these weren't trick questions, but even still, is this once again, we have a president that can't talk to the press and is very bad at it? And we should just accept it? Or should he like somehow take a weekend and instead of going golfing, learn how to talk to the press?
Well, I don't think that's
what you're actually. I think he's got ingrained habits of, you know, talking to the press a particular way. And there's always been, up until January 20th, there's been a, well, you know, okay, whatever, Donald just is like that. And now it just has different resonance that he doesn't fully appreciate, that, you know, this belligerence, this belittling of other people is no longer acceptable. But it always has been for him prior to this.
Well, I think there's also the – I think you also have the fact that he's been used to dealing with one set of press, which is, you know, I'll say the Hollywood press by and large. Yes, he lives in New York, but it's, you know, it's the entertainment media press. And
the entertainment, yeah.
Yeah. And then you had the, you know, the political press got detailed to him when he started running for president, but they didn't really bother to take him seriously to start with. And really, this is the first time that they've actually been trying to take him seriously. So in a weird way, I would say the press is partially to blame insofar as he's basically been trained to deal with the wrong set of press. And the political press is then being shocked when this guy who's trained to deal with Hollywood and who on the campaign trail was never really untrained from it, is still dealing with them, and he's not actually dealing with them anymore.
Well, I will say that's a refreshing point of view.
I don't think if he had, like, 5 days to prepare for the press conference, it would be any different. Just like he had a long time to prepare for the debates, and it's the same thing we got in the debates as well. I mean, it's his way.
At what point are we going to stop focusing on his personal craziness, which admittedly is fun to talk about and concerning, and actually address the policy issues that he used to win, but where he's still actually wrong?
I think you will start addressing it the minute it stops, that his personality and so forth actually stops driving news, clicks and views and so forth, more than policy does.
Well, I'll jump in and say, you know, with the exception of immigration, I don't think he's really touched that much on policy yet. And I keep telling my friends on the left, guys, we're in the preseason. The season hasn't begun yet. Because once they start writing legislation to change the tax code, to do away with the EPA or to defang it, to do away with to change Medicare to a voucher system, to raise the Social Security age again and maybe change that system. Once they start really doing what they intend to do, that's when the policy discussions will come front and center, and those are going to be much more intense than what we're going through right now, in my opinion.
I don't think Trump will do anything on entitlements, but I see your larger point, and I think it does have some validity. You may have a point there.
Yeah, I mean, it is the preseason. Right now, it's just cabinet battles, which, you know, leads to these personality blow-ups that, you know, people like to fixate on, so.
Right, right. And, you know, frankly, he needs a year to get his footing. People will forget all of this stuff, or most of this stuff, by September of 2017. But they won't forget the legislation that he's pushing forward to change the face of America. And on that happy note.
Joyous. Yeah. Do we have
speaking of issues, there are two that I want to touch on. I'm going to mention them both, but we'll take one at a time. One is education, and the other one is healthcare. But why don't we start with education, since, Greg, your governor in Ohio made a little bit of news this week that touches on the education issue.
Oh, my God. Okay. Well, you all know I'm going to call Kasich an asshole, so I'm going to do that now. So in his budget that he just submitted, one of the things, it's very deep, but luckily we have people who actually read them, put in something that said for teachers to renew their license, they have to do interning or job shadowing, where they would have to take some time, and that was unclear whether it was going to be during the school day or on their summer break or something, but they would have to take time and go out into the local community, and that was the exact words, to go out into the local community and go to local businesses and job shadow or intern to receive their actual. So in other words, Kasich doesn't actually see teaching as like real work, and teachers have to go out and job shadow or intern at real work to see what it would be like to give back to the community. And
I were a teacher under a rule like this, I would immediately go shadow my fellow teacher just to mess with Kasich. I'm shadowing.
No, that wouldn't have been allowed. That wouldn't have been allowed.
It has to be a job. So teachers are just, you know, and I do have a license, but not an actual. I have a substitute license. Let's be clear. Ohio still has standards. So
you're like Peggy Hill. You're the Peggy Hill. Of Ohio.
I'm the Peggy Hill. I'm the Peggy Hill of Cincinnati at this point, which works out really well. Trust me, me and Bobby.
By the way, you know, I'm not so sure that Kasich was suggesting education policy, as he might have been pitching a buddy cop show, because I could see the teacher that has to intern with the streetwise cop. And the two of them are in the squad car together, and you've got 22 episodes easy.
Well, what's funny is that at one point, the teachers union said, well, this would be a good way to get credits and an alternate way to renew license. But the way it's worded is this is in addition to.
Well, the way it's worded is really vague, and it's as the Board of Education shall decide. I mean, it's. I definitely worth watching, but I read in, I believe it was Dayton Daily News, that this could be anything from, you know, having some business leaders in for a lunch during one of their mini in-services, like the one that my school is having, where my kids don't go to school, not just tomorrow, but Tuesday as well.
You know, here's the thing, though. Had there been any sort of political foresight and thinking, the AFL-CIO and the SEIU would have said, you know what? We have a whole bunch of internal staff and organizers and lawyers, and we'd love to have the teachers shadow us and watch us for 3 months. Yeah, this regulation is just peachy.
That would have been genius.
It would have been genius. That's probably why I didn't think to do it.
Hey, now.
Hey.
And finally, looking at healthcare, Humana made some news this week by deciding not to do their job. They pulled out of their job
is to take massive losses on the exchange.
Well, we can debate
Technically speaking, the CEO is doing his job in protecting shareholder returns.
All right, okay.
Kevin doesn't believe in shareholder returns. He's from Hollywood.
I'm much right. more capitalist than you give me credit for.
Why don't you explain
nice, my money's all tied up in braces.
Why don't you explain some what Humana too. Actually does?
Well, Humana pulled out of what?
11.
Markets? 11 markets.
11 okay. out of 18.
And to my knowledge, they only represented about 150,000 customers in the exchanges. So this was not a real earthquake. In the healthcare industry, it just was painted that way by conservatives who were trying to tarnish the reputation of Obamacare.
Just by a thousand cuts, because United Healthcare pulled out last fall, and
Aetna's already pulled out.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one after. Yeah. I mean, they just stack up. And right now, 32% of counties have only one insurer. I mean, you know, if you like your plan, you can keep your plan, or you're going to take this plan because there's no other plan.
I mean, we do have to admit that what has happened with this repeal and replace later concept that came out of the House this year, they've introduced instability into the market that makes, you know, these losses look even worse to shareholders and executives than they looked, you know, when they thought that there was a chance that everything could stabilize over the course of time.
But even before this, you had a huge number of counties that had only one company or that, you know, might have had two if they were lucky. But, you know, the number of counties with more than one or two was not as much as it was initially pitched to be. I think that in many respects, you're just accelerating the timeline of this happening because you had a steady pattern of pullouts. And the thing is, I haven't heard over the last few years of too many cases of an insurance company deciding we're going to enter a new market. That has been missing. We've heard plenty of pullouts, not much talk of entry or reentry.
Here's the reality, folks. We are going to have single payer healthcare in this country. It's just that the single payer will not be the government. It'll be Blue Cross Blue Shield. They are our health insurance monopoly. Let's all just get on the boat. Look, this is. There are a whole bunch of reasons for this. Humana is probably, they are probably, as most health insurers, not named Blue Cross Blue Shield, will look at and go, you know something? The patently deficient and unaffordably careless act was bad. Whatever the hell the Republicans are going to come up with is probably going to be worse. We're getting the first train out. Until you do things like convince states to get rid of certificate of public need regimes, until you do things like break the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services American Medical Association price lock, you will do nothing to fix the big problem, which is not health insurance. It's the price of health services itself. The problem in health insurance is simply a symptom of that larger problem. And until you deal with those two particular issues, you haven't dealt with the larger disease, forgive the pun, and all you're doing are treating symptoms. And unless you're Blue Cross Blue Shield and think, hey, I can be the next regulated monopoly and this is wonderful, you want nothing to do with this. And that's why they're pulling out.
Well, there's another thing that we have to understand that as individuals, and this needs to be a national understanding, is that healthcare isn't cheap. It's never going to be cheap. There is nothing that we're going to do to bring down the actual cost of the provision of healthcare. And we just need to figure out a better way of distributing the pool of payments into the actual provision of services. And it's so frustrating that we sit here and talk about, well, how can we bring costs down? And we're not going to bring costs down. Costs are coming down.
Rebecca, the average American does not give a damn about the cost of healthcare. They care about the price of healthcare. The average American cares nothing about what the government spends for healthcare. She cares about what she will spend for healthcare.
I have to disagree that costs don't come down. I mean, like LASIK surgery comes down because the consumer pays and there's innovation and there's competition and people actually see the bottom line and nobody's paying in their stead.
I mean, and you hear about this all the time, that you, basically you've got three options on what you can have something done and you get to pick two, you know, cheap, fast, or well done. And in a lot of countries, you've seen trades where they'll take cheap and well done in exchange for having waiting lists and so forth. And Americans seem to want to try and have all three, and that's just not going to happen.
Unless they want LASIK surgery.
Or a boob job. I think you can get two for the price of one.
Or
a boob job.
Yeah, so you can see him better. And with that, I want to thank everybody for listening to this episode of the More Perfect Union Podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at MPU Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/More Perfect Union Podcast. And share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can discover us as well. And if you enjoy political debates like this one and would like to be a part of ours, please join us on Facebook in our political discussion group, Open Fire. We're all there, and we'd love to see you there, too. Until next time...
Can we have a moment of silence for the Swedish terrorist attacks now?
I want to tell you guys
an entirely new spin on Stockholm Syndrome.
Oh!